Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table,
a new United Methodist community of faith taking shape at Central UMC in Sacramento, California.
The podcasts currently feature the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Duhirsu,
with a musical introduction by Anthony Coleman, our director of music.
Thanks for listening. Saul, still breathing threats and murder against the disciples of the Lord, he was a really bad guy, went to the high priest and asked him for letters to the synagogues at Damascus so that if he found any who belonged to the way, that means following Jesus, men or women, he might bring them bound to Jerusalem. Now, he was going along and approaching Damascus, and suddenly a light from heaven flashed around him. I'm just going to stop here for a minute and ask you all to look at this sculpture right here to the left of the screen. This is a sculpture that historically is part of this congregation, which is part of this story. It's called The Conversion of Saul. He fell to the ground and heard a voice saying to him, "Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me?" He asked, "Who are you, Lord?" And the reply came, "I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting. But get up and enter the city, and you will be told what you are to do." And the men who were traveling with him stood speechless, because they heard the voice but saw no one. And Saul got up from the ground, and though his eyes were open, he could see nothing. So they led him by the hand and brought him into Damascus. For 3 days he was without sight and neither ate nor drank. Now, there was a disciple in Damascus named Ananias. See why we sang that song. And the Lord said to him in a vision, "Ananias." And he answered, "Here I am, Lord." And the Lord said to him, "Get up and go to the street called Straight, and at the house of Judas, look for a man of Tarsus named Saul. And at this moment, he is praying, and he has seen in a vision a man named Ananias come in and lay his hands on him, so that he might regain his sight." But Ananias answered, "Lord, I have heard from many about this man, how much evil he has done to your saints in Jerusalem. And here he has authority from the chief priests to bind all who invoke your name." But the Lord said to him, "Go, for he is an instrument whom I have chosen to bring my name before Gentiles and kings and before the people of Israel. I myself will show him how much he must suffer for the sake of my name." So Ananias went and entered the house, and he laid his hands on Saul and said, "Brother Saul, the Lord Jesus, who appeared to you on your way here, has sent me so that you may regain your sight and be filled with the Holy Spirit." And immediately, something like scales fell from his eyes, and his sight was restored. And then he got up and was baptized, and after taking some food, he regained his strength. For several days, he was with the disciples in Damascus, and immediately he began to proclaim Jesus in the synagogue, saying, "He is the Son of God."
Celebrated Easter morning together a couple of weeks ago, and now we're living in the season of Easter, but some of us were here at Easter together, and a banjo player named Keith Little stood right about here, and after worship, we played a song called Roll Away Your Stone by Mumford & Sons. I remember it because I've wanted to hear that song in worship a lot. And I know nothing about music, very little, but I'm incrementally learning a little bit more. After worship, I talked with Keith, and Keith said, your musicians are brave. They're courageous. And I was like, yeah, they are. I agree. And then he said, it is crazy. It's crazy in the middle of a song to go from 4 to 3 in the middle of a song with people you've barely played with. You do not do that. And we just did it. And Keith doesn't express very much emotion, but that's what he shared. And, you know, 2 years ago, had Keith told me to go from 4 to 3 in the middle of a song, I would have assumed that someone died, actually, that, like, we'd lost an artist. We went from 4 people to 3 people. But it turns out, in music, there's this whole thing called beats, and this whole thing called time. And some songs are in 4. Brendan's helping me on this. Anthony's helping me on this. Some songs are in 3, but very rarely does a song go from 4 to 3 in the middle of a song. And it turns out that Roll Away Your Stone does just that. In the middle, it changes time signature. And there's got to be other people that are like me in the room, so bear with me for a moment. It's like a song goes from 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, something like that. My piano teacher can correct me later, but I did it, right? All right, we're done. Go in peace. No, but on some level, when you get it like that, you want other people to know, and you want to celebrate that moment, because it's a huge thing for some of us to even know that there's numbers that were there. And for others of us, it's this scary place to go. For a Grammy-nominated banjo player to say, I sat in with your musicians, and they're brave and courageous, because you don't sit down and do that with people you've never played with. They went to this place, to the edge of a cliff, and they looked out, and they're like, we're going to do it. And so think how much trust that takes. Think how much courage it takes. And then think how much listening it takes. Listening to the depth of the music and to all of those people who are playing with you. I have this thing on my iPhone, and it's back there, but it's called a metronome, and it counts the beats for me. And mostly, I think if I were in a group and we were trying to change time like that, you'd want to pass this around so that everybody could see it. But it turns out you can't stop the music to pass this thing around. Everyone just has to listen more and more deeply into the music and to trust it. You're going to go and do something that you haven't done before with these folks. That can become a mess. That can become a mess, because you can go from 4 to 3 and everybody can miss where's the one. And some people have changed and some people haven't, and the music can quickly go into just chaos. And so where is the one? Where is the beat? And what are you going to do now that you've gotten yourself into this mess? See, the beat of Saul's life was a total mess. He didn't think so. He didn't think so at all. The beat for him was really loud, like violently loud. So much so that he wasn't going to listen to the music of anyone around him. He knew exactly where the beat was. He had absolute confidence that this is the beat. I'm on it. I've got this. I don't need anything else. I'm not going to take a second to listen to the lives or the music of those around me. See, it actually was his job. He made it his vocation to silence the music of the early church, you could say. He did not want to hear it. And so he literally was taking people's lives who wanted to follow Jesus. Saul was schooled in the way of the Pharisees, just like the moderate Gamaliel that we talked about last week. See, that was a person who went into the mess and said, I'm going to go into it with you all, and we're going to find the one together. When I say find the one, like, is everybody in the room know what that means? Does anybody besides me, I didn't know what that meant until a couple weeks ago, does anybody else not get that? Like, when you're playing with musicians, you're all communicating together what the time is, just unconsciously when you're really on it, I think. Does that seem fair? It just happens. But when it gets lost, it's hard to figure out what to do in the midst of that. So Gamaliel said, we're going to go into the mess of that, not knowing where it is, and we're going to find the one. And then we're going to start to play music again together. Saul said, I don't care where your one is. I've got my one, and this is it. And if you play anything, I'm just going to play louder, more brutally. That is just how it's going to be. So Saul is on his way to Damascus when everything changed, when his beat pulses violently. He's going after people. He's en route to murder more people. I imagine at that moment, like if it's a background or music, that it's intensifying, both the sound and the intensity. It's like quarter beats. Is that right, people? Quarter beats. It's boom, boom, boom. It's going faster. And then it goes silent. The beat that he'd held is literally just cut off, stopped in its tracks. He's knocked over. In the biblical text, it says that he goes into this place of darkness. But I think if you were to translate it into jazz, he goes into a place of utter silence. The beat just stops. And he hears this, Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me? And all he can muster is, who are you, Lord? And that the answer to that sounds so simple, Jesus. But for maybe the first time, Saul begins to hear not only a different beat, but he begins to see how violently devastating his own beat has been for other folks. He begins not only to hear this beat of Jesus, the rhythm of God, but he begins to hear his own beat, maybe again for the first time. And it says that you've been killing me. Over and over again. When you helped them stone Stephen, that was me. When you trapped my followers in Damascus, that was me. When you collude with the authorities, when you make these murderous threats, every single time, that's me. When you're killing them, you're killing me. And so the book of Acts has Saul plunged into this dark period for 3 days, blindness. The image for me, though, is more powerful at this moment in this series, that he plunges into silence. He goes from the music that he had been moving to nothing, not a sound. 3 days. However you think of that time, what's clear to me is that Saul dies to who he's been, and he's born again in this new way as Paul. His conversion, it obviously echoes the resurrection of Jesus, who on Friday was put to death on a cross by the powers that be that said, we're going to crush that. But on Sunday, God's story says that death doesn't have the last answer. So resurrection is on the loose and Jesus is being raised. We tend to think about Paul's story, at least I have, as the consummate conversion story. It's like one person's life totally turned around. But the truth of the matter is, this isn't a solo story at all. It's not actually about personal conversion. And when we make it about personal conversion, I think we as a church both oversimplify the story and we oversimplify our own lives to think that it's all about us, my story, your story. See, it turns out that Saul is doing a lot more than confronting his own demons in this private exchange with the risen Christ. He's doing a lot more than that. This isn't Saul's solo into Paul. This is actually a combo or an ensemble the whole time. First, there are these unnamed travelers who are there with Saul. He's blind. He's been struck blind, or he's been put into a moment of silence, is the way I'll say it. And they could have just left him there. They could have just gone from 4 to 3. Been like, we're out of here. And they don't. They take his hand. And without that hand, I don't think blind Saul could have made his way back to this other house. And maybe you've been knocked down, punched in the mouth, as we talked about it last week. Perhaps the musicians around you gave you a hand in that moment of silence. See, we tend to all the time think about life as this solo act and what am I going to do? But the truth of the matter is that it's always a communal act. It's always an ensemble. We're always part of what we might call a combo or a big band. Frank Barrett, whose writing we're using to help frame this worship series, he reflects on the communal dimensions of jazz in this way. In order for jazz to work, players must develop a remarkable degree of empathic competence, a mutual orientation to one another's unfolding. They continually take one another's musical ideas into context as constraints and facilitations in guiding their musical choices. Here's what saxophonist Lee Konitz has to say about this interactive interplay and the challenges it constantly presents. I want to relate to the bass player and the piano player and the drummer so that I know at any given moment what they're all doing. The goal is always to relate as fully as possible to every sound that everyone is making, but whew, it's very difficult for me to achieve. At different points, I'll listen to any particular member of the group and relate to them as directly as possible, as in my solo. See, the book of Acts includes this story, I think, in large part because the truth is that following the way of Jesus, the practice that we call Christian discipleship, it's way too much for one individual. Only within a caring community can we as individuals find the way and the resources and the relationships to forge an enduring faith, like to hit a groove and to stay in it over time. The unnamed travelers, they took Saul's hand, but it wasn't just them. It was this other person who'd been practicing faith for a long, long time. His name is Ananias, and he's a follower of the way in Damascus. And unlike Saul, he'd been rooting his life in grace and growing in faith, living to God's beat for a long, long time, really listening deeply to God's music. So when God says to Ananias doesn't fall over blind. Ananias is like a musician playing back and forth with God. And it doesn't throw him off because he's heard this music before. It seems like a conversation with God is how Ananias has been living for a long, long time. They've been playing music. They've been part of the same ensemble. It turns out, though, that God's music at this moment was like a jazz standard. Except God wanted Ananias to go in a place that Ananias didn't feel prepared to go. And so at that moment, God says, Ananias, I want you to go and take a solo and be prepared to go all the way back to this house, and you're going to find Saul, and you're going to help him be a part of this music team. And Ananias is a deep person of faith who's been around the block, so he thinks, well, that's crazy. Why would I go out and play this solo that's this unknown thing with Saul? Are you sure you have the right guy? Like, this is the guy that's been silencing followers of the way all over the place. Like, if I take my saxophone with me, it's unlikely that I'll come back with it. It's actually unlikely that I'll come back. That's how serious it was. And so I imagine I imagine actually that Ananias kept playing back and forth with God. Sure you don't have any other ideas? I'll take your lead. This is the lead. We're going to go someplace you don't want to go, someplace you haven't been, and we're going to see what happens. I'll be there playing with you. God almost says it like this. Look, Ananias, you have been rooting your life in grace and growing in faith in all of these ways. And I am thankful that the church is growing up around you. But you know what? We need to throw some gasoline on this fire. And I don't think you can really do it, Ananias. But Saul could help us. And you could help Saul. So we're going to play some music together, and he's going to take this new church to places that you've never imagined it, that you didn't think it could even go. And so Ananias finds the strength in him to get up and to journey towards Saul. And then he finds the courage to actually go inside once he gets there. And then they start to play music because God has determined that this crazy character named Saul is redeemable. Nobody's beyond redemption, even this guy. And his story is going to transform lives, and it's going to reconcile so many people to this new way. See, God cares about Saul and chooses Saul. So Ananias moves out in that direction. He meets up with Saul, and all of a sudden, the scales start to fall down off of Saul's eyes. And folks start to call him Paul, which in Christian world means that we're going to baptize him, and we're going to start to build a band together with him in it. And it's not us that brings Saul into this band. It's actually God that brings Saul into the band. And so maybe your story isn't that far off from early Saul. Maybe you're playing music so loudly that you can't hear anybody else around you. Maybe you're so self-righteous and you feel like you've got this figured out. I know I've been there. We have those seasons where we get into that place. We can't stop judging and crushing the folks around us. So we play louder and louder and louder. What's going to happen to us so that we might hear anew? Perhaps, though, you're like Saul at that next moment where you've been knocked down. Your music has been silenced. You're unable to hear anything right now, and all you can hold is, when is my 3 days going to be up? Because it feels like it's passed a couple times already. Whose hand is going to be there for you? And how will you reach when they hold that hand? How will you reach when they try to guide? Perhaps the scales have already fallen off of your eyes. And if so, you know better than anyone in the world that the groove that comes to us and overtakes us can be lost more quickly than we imagine. You're in the flow of the music and then punched in the mouth on a new place, knocked off your feet in just a moment. Who are you going to surround yourself with so that when that happens, there's a hand there with you? Perhaps your story is like Ananias. You've been practicing your faith by rooting your life in grace and worship, and you're in the kitchen table growing in faith. So where is God calling you to reach in love? Who are the people around you that you don't want to go towards, that God is saying, this person needs to play music with us? And how are you going to respond? A drummer named Max Roach recalls a story, and this is in Frank Barrett's book. It's a story when he's playing a performance of Night in Tunisia with Dizzy Gillespie, and his fellow players lost the sense of a common beat while they're all playing. He says it this way: when the beat got turned around, it went for about 8 bars. And in such a case, someone has to lay out. You can't fight it. Dizzy stopped first because he heard what was happening quicker than the rest of us. and he didn't know where the one was. And then it was up to Ray Brown and Bishop and myself. One of us had to stop. So Bishop waved off. And then it was up to Ray Brown and myself to clear it up. Almost immediately, we found the common one. And the others came back in without the public even realizing what had happened. And when they find that, they hit what musicians call this pocket, this groove. And they start to play together. And they start to play together in such a way that the musicians that I know, they talk about it. And this is harsh in the world that we live in, because we like to think of ourselves as living in a world where we pull ourselves up by our bootstraps, and it's where I'm going with this. But musicians find when they hit this groove that they're playing something beyond themselves. It wasn't just about them. And they often use sacred metaphors. It's this beautiful moment. It's transcendent, some folks would say. And this feels huge to me, because the truth is, when I get into those situations and I lose the one when I'm with other people, my tendency isn't to just fade back and to listen to the music. Mine is to fade back and to think, who messed this up? It turns out that it's not usually myself. Shocker. But I'm quick to try to figure it out. I'm just going to stop playing, and I'm going to analyze the situation, and I am going to point out all of the things. So imagine that in the middle of that set. Instead of two people fading out so that the other two can find the one, it's, peace, I'm out of here. I'm finding a different band. These folks suck. That's most of our tendencies, right? And when musicians do that in the moment, they are no longer going to be playing music. They're no longer musicians. That's the heart of jazz music, is that we're going to go into those unknown places and not be afraid to go right there. But when we do it, we're going to have to listen so deeply to what's happening, so deeply to the beat of God in the midst of us, that God will help us to find a way. See, they assume that no matter how incoherent and unpredictable this moment is, this situation is, that they will find creative possibilities out of it. Not only do they want that, they like long for it. They want to go right up to the edge of that mess, live in it to see what happens musically, and then go and just dive right there. What if they said, I don't like those notes you played. They didn't match what I was thinking. Let's start back over. Jazz isn't built around no's. It's not built around no to this or no to that. And I want to invite us, as we close, to remember the yeses in that story from Acts. It seemed like a small yes for these unnamed travelers to lift out their hands and to say, we're not going to go from 4 to 3. And they put a hand on Saul. It seemed like an irrational yes for Ananias to say, I'm going to go where God is sending me, as crazy as that is. And we know that it's a life-changing yes that Saul says. It's a changing yes that says, I'm going to die to how I've been so that I can be born in this new way. But the biggest yes of all in this whole story is God's. It's God's yes that nobody, not Saul, not you, not me, is beyond redemption. Nobody is beyond redemption. And in those yeses, may we find our lives, and may we hit the groove of God's song of resurrection. Amen.
So much of our way of being in song with God could be considered prayer. Prayer is a place where we often think we're going in solo, but in this setting, We do it in a group, in a way in which we witness to each other our sense of wanting to be still before God so that we can hear the beat that God is already singing in so many of our hearts. And one of the ways we do that is by just simply sitting and listening to the music. Another way we do that is by lighting candles. We have them in the bottom of the stained glass windows over there. We have grown, our numbers have grown, so we need to be sensitive to when someone moves to want to get out of the pew, let's help them do that by moving. I know that sounds elemental, but it's hard to have that courage to get up and to go pray, especially for the first time. But let's take some time now, and we're going to listen to a jazz standard. As we move into listening for God's beat and our own heartbeat, that's your one. That's where you start. So take a moment, breathe in, find your own heartbeat first, and then let us pray together.